Welcome to the Curious Performer Podcast, the podcast for performers who want to grow. Are you ready? Ready to improve your show, to grow your business? Are you ready to build your brand? Then turn up the volume and get ready to hear from some of the best performers in the business. I'm your host, Keith Tussing, and I'll be asking the questions we're all curious about. Today's guest is the 2018 Cotswold Stage Magician of the Year, four-time winner of the Cotswold Close-Up Magician of the Year, and the UK Children's Entertainer of the Year 2014. He is proud to be part of the Pod Children's Charity Team, bringing smiles to sick children in hospitals all over the UK. He is also the entertainer for the Cotswold Downs Group. He has lectured and performed at the Magic Circle, the International Ventriloquist Convention in Cincinnati, and the Children's Entertainer Convention in L.A. I'm excited to have Colin Diamond on the show today. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me, Keith. Hope all is well with you.
Yes, and I hope everything's great there for you in the U.K. We're going to have a little bit of fun today. We're going to talk about you. We're going to hear some of your secrets, how you do what you do.
Fire away. How would you like to start?
Well, let's start at the very beginning. How did you get into this wonderful world of entertainment?
So I've always been a bit of a performer. I've been playing guitar for as long as I can remember. My grandmother gave me a little plastic, it's actually a ukulele because it's just got four plastic strings with a picture of the Beatles on it when I was about 3 years old. Bizarrely, if you turn it around the other way, it's shaped with Mickey Mouse ears because the company that made them made millions of Mickey Mouse guitars that didn't sell. And then they slapped a new cover on it, and I think they made some with Elvis and some with the Beatles. But yeah, so I've had that since. So I've been playing guitar in one form or another for as long as I can remember. And then I ran away to London and joined a rock band and lived in a squat and did all sorts of weird things. But I never got into magic as a kid. Most magicians and ventriloquists you talk to, they all talk about having a magic set when they were little, and that's what started them off on this amazing career. Mine worked slightly differently. I bought a magic set for my son when he was young. Probably when he was too young. He might have only been about five, and I bought him this magic set. And then I started stealing things out of it and taking them down to the pub and just showing little tricks to friends at the pub, and thought, oh, this is quite good fun. I quite like this. And I was living in London at the time, and I heard on the radio a magician called John Lenihan, and he did a bit of magic on the radio and was saying that he was running a Monday night magic show. So anyone who's interested in a magic show, because he was fed up being the only magician on comedy nights. So there'd be like lots of comedians and he'd be the one magician. So he decided to run a night with four magicians and one comedian. And it was above a pub. It was above the Hen and Chickens. And I went to the first one and loved it, and went to just about everyone. I think I went to all the ones at the Hen and Chickens, and then they moved to another part of London, and I didn't go quite so often then. So I was going every night, or every Monday, and seeing lots of like young, upcoming, cool magicians. So it wasn't your traditional tuxedo and doves and stuff. It was sort of close-up magic and comedy magic, because all these people who were working there were working the comedy clubs. So they were all quite funny. It was all very lighthearted, but saw some great magicians there, because he also brought in any magicians that were around would come and do a set in this, upstairs in this little pub. And then I was there one night, and one of the guys who also used to turn up every Monday, so we'd chat, and he said, oh, you do a bit of magic, don't you? I said, yeah. He went, well, there's this guy running an evening course in one of the local colleges called So You Want to Be a Magician. And I went, okay. So I looked that up and thought, okay, that looks interesting. So I went to this night course at the college. And again, it was, I don't know, Tuesday, Wednesday night or whatever it was, for 6 or 10 weeks. And this guy did a bit of everything. He did some balloon modeling. He did children's shows. He did close-up magic. So he did a bit of everything and taught us all a bit of everything. And then we learned more in the pub afterwards, because we'd go to the pub and show each other what we'd been working on. But one of the things I got out of listening or watching this guy teach us was, you know what? If he can do it, so can I. Because he wasn't that good. He was a professional magician. But you know what it's like? The only magicians you see on TV, it's like if you think about being a musician, if you're watching Eric Clapton and B.B. King and, you know, top guys playing guitar, and that's what you see, and those are the records you listen to, you kind of forget there's these whole host of other musicians who make money playing in small orchestras or playing in the pit at theatres and things. There's all these jobs for other musicians. Same with magicians. You know, we'd watch Paul Daniels or Wayne Dobson on TV, and that's what we thought of as a magician. Not really realizing there was a whole host of guys who made money doing children's birthday parties, doing the local restaurant on a Sunday. Didn't really know that level of it existed.
That is so true. We grow up with that perception of the only magicians you know are those we see on TV, and you don't realize there is literally thousands of people making money doing magic in these smaller situations.
Yeah, my son makes films, and we were watching a film in the theater, and it's like we stayed and we watched all the credits. And it's like, if you told your careers advisor at school that you want to do something in movies, they'd go, oh, only very few people get to work in movies. And you stay and watch the credits. It takes like a quarter of an hour for all the credits to go through. There's thousands of people. So all these creative jobs, there's a space for lots of people. And it's funny, I talked to John Lenihan recently and said this thing about, you know, this guy wasn't very good. And he said he's a great believer in mediocrity as being like a gateway in. And again, he now writes books and things. And it was like, well, you know, if you only look at the top authors, you think, oh, I can't do that. And you go, well, you got a bookshop. There's thousands of books in there. So anyway, so that started me. And then I was, so my first wife and I were still together then. And we just had our second child. And she really wanted to get back into the workforce. And I was quite happy to leave work and stay at home and look after our boys. So that's what we did. We swapped over. She went and got a real job and I stayed home as house husband. And she said, one of the things you need to do is you do need to do something other than this. So I was thinking, well, maybe with, you know, this newfound interest in magic, maybe I can do something with that. And the job I was in at the time, whenever you left, they would have a collection for people. And I worked fairly close to Davenport's Magic Studio, which is a big magic shop in London. So normally all that happens, I was working for the record chain, HMV. And normally all that happens is people leave with a big stack of records or whatever. And I said to the guy who was organizing my collection, I knew I was getting money from work as well. I said, if I write you a list, can you go to Davenport's and just get whatever you can off the list? And there's still things that I use. And that was like 25 years ago. And there's still things I use from that today. I've still got the same dove pan. I've got Who's Who at the Zoo was bought for me from then. And I think there's a couple of other things that crop up occasionally in my set. So I was doing it then. So for several years, like as a bit of extra money, a bit of pin money, as we call it. And then back in 2007, I got divorced. And then it was like, oh, okay, right. Now you've got to make a decision. Are you going to go and get a real job, or are you going to try and make this magic thing work as a full-time income? And I didn't really want a real job. So I pushed forward and got this thing going to the level it is. Well, to the level it was a couple of years ago before everything went pear-shaped.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is great. And I love the idea that you came into it as an adult. As we do, we hear stories all the time of when I was seven, my uncle bought me a magic kit, and I've loved it ever since. I mean, I had magic kits as a kid. We lived in Houston at the time, and we went to a little magic shop, but I was never thought of it as a profession. And then put it away, and years later, used it as teaching tools in church. And then came to a point where we need to supplement our income. And I thought, well, yep, I can do balloons, or I could do, and we started figuring out that there were literally thousands of people that had these little jobs doing magic and balloons and puppets and all of that. And transitioned very slowly into, oh, this is a real job.
this is a job. Yeah, this is what you need to be doing. It's an interesting how you sort of come to these things. But one of the things, because it was never really a hobby. There's a very, very short time mm-hmm. when magic was a hobby. Literally, maybe 18 months or so. Between me picking up my first trick and me getting my first paid job as a magician. So in some ways, I do think about magic differently than a lot of other magicians. A lot of magicians, they have this great reverence for magic and the art and, oh, well, I've been doing it since I was five. And, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, no, to me, it is kind of like a job. It is more like just a job. More than that, on a hobby. I'm not always carrying magic with me. I'm not one of these people who's just like, oh, you know, oh, let me show you a trick. 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 More often than not, people will go, can you show me a trick? And I go, no, nothing with me. It's not what I do. Which is a great thing about doing children's magic. If you say, no, I entertain children with puppets and things, and it's like, oh, okay. So they don't expect you to carry a great big puppet around with you, so you can get away with it sometimes.
That's true. Now, speaking of puppets, how did you get from magic to puppets? Because that's how I know you, is through puppets more than magic.
Yeah, I think puppets is what I'm more known for. It's probably, again, the thing that I love more. Mm. I've always loved puppet shows. I've always loved ventriloquism. You know, the Muppets was that great revelation.
Yes.
I was playing with a band when the Muppets were out, and we used to rehearse on a Sunday. And we were rehearsing in this big kind of country house in the west of England. And at 5 o'clock, I think it was, in the UK, we'd all stop rehearsing. We'd go down to the family room, and all the family who owned the house would all join together, and we'd all watch the Muppets. Yep. And then we'd go back to rehearsing again. It was like, you know, it was such a big thing. So I got into puppetry because I was doing the magic, and I ordered this magic trick from a magic dealer. I don't know. Do you know Lovey Duck as a trick?
Yeah.
With a cat and a duck. It was like a version of that, but it was a Father Christmas. It was a Christmas trick. Hmm. And it arrived, and I opened the box and went, oh, this is horrid. It was just plastic, and it's like super glued together, and the edges didn't meet, and it just looked horrible. And it was like, that can't go in my show. I'm not having anything that looks that bad in my show. Mm. So it was like, well, I called them up, and I was polite because I thought, well, you never know, the guy who made this might be the person on the end of the phone. So I said, oh, I've got this trick and it's not really suitable. It's too much like something else that I've got. I didn't realize when I was ordering it. And I went, okay, well, the Magic Circle used to have, or still have, they have a dealer's day. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a standard convention. It was just magic dealers used to turn up. There was no lectures or anything at the time. Just a big, big room in a big hotel filled with all the magic dealers from up and down the country. And he said, well, we're going to be there whenever it was, a couple of weeks' time. So if you're coming, bring it back, and either we'll give you your money back or you can exchange it for something else on the stand. Okay. So I went there, gave it back to them, and went, oh, okay. Oh, they had an Axtel Pedro parrot up on the top shelf. And I kind of looked at that and went, So I had a little play with that, and it was like £100. It's probably £99. And I'd never spent £99 on anything. And this prop that I was taking back was £50. And I was like, oh, okay. And I looked around the rest of the hall. I thought, so if I got my money back, what would I spend that £50 on? And the only thing that I found that I liked on any of the other stands was another Axtel bird, whether it was Vern or one of his other birds. So in the end, I went back to him and said, I'll take the parrot. I'll give you an extra £50 and I'll take the parrot. Because my head works great with figures. So instead of it being a 100-pound parrot, it was only actually a 50-pound parrot because that's all the money I had to hand over. It's like the fact that I'd paid him 50 pounds.
That's how you explain it to your wife is, it was only 50 pounds.
Exactly. That's the way it goes. And I think the only thing that my first wife ever encouraged me to actually buy, one of my friends, I went to see him and we were trying to make a false arm. And she went, why don't you just buy the Axtel one? It's all done. It's like, so I bought that. So then I had the bird and the arm. And I thought, well, if it's the parrot, all I need to do is squawk. I can squawk and I can find something for it to do. And we'll arrange some final script with it just squawking. And the squawking turned into more things that sounded more like words. And then eventually I started doing sort of proper ventriloquism, but you know, ventriloquism with bad lip control, that slowly the lip control got a bit better. It's never perfect, but that's the aim. And I was doing a show. It was a large Asian first birthday party. It's one of the big celebrations that some of the our community have, and that where the first birthday is an important day. Mm-hmm. And they have massive parties. You know, I don't know, there must have been maybe 200 people there. And I was booked to entertain the kids. And I thought, well, I'll do the parrot routine because there'll be young kids there. They liked it. Because at the time I was doing the parrot routine for sort of like sevens and unders. And if there was any people over seven, the parrot routine wasn't in it. Mm. So I thought, well, I'll do it because the old younger ones can watch. And then I'll move on to something that more suitable for the older ones. And at the end of the show, some of the 10 and 11-year-old children were coming up to me and going, how did that parrot work? We had it all sorted, and then it mentioned, you know, the fact that he's wearing a yellow shirt, and then we were lost. Now, this was mid-90s, mid to late 90s. And at that time, there were no ventriloquists on the television. Hmm. Ventriloquism hadn't been seen probably for 10 years on British TV. But what there was, it was the uprising of things like the Furbies and all sorts of toys that had sensors on them. So you'd walk into a child's bedroom and it would go, intruder alert, or whatever. There was all these remote control toys and the beginning of robotic stuff, but no ventriloquists. So they just thought that this was some sort of pre-programmed thing I had on my arm until it started talking to them individually. And it's like, how did that work? So then I suddenly went, okay, well, this works for all ages. So then it just blossomed and bloomed and became shelves full of puppets and boxes of puppets and thousands and thousands of pounds worth of puppets. Yeah, from the humble. But one of the things that people often ask when you do puppets, and it's like, oh, how much should I spend on a puppet? Mm. When I was growing up, our two main ventriloquists that we saw here was Ray Allen with Lord Charles. And if you know Ray Allen and Lord Charles, Lord Charles was an insol Davenport's figure. Well, those kind of the standard British figures with the leather on the lips and things with, I'm not quite sure how many movements Lord Charles had. But yeah, so in today's money, it would be, I don't know, £3,000, something like that, $4,000 maybe, you know, proper hard ventriloquist figure. And on the other side, the other ventriloquist, American, who we had lots over here, was Shari Lewis. Shari Lewis and Lamb Chop. And Lamb Chop is basically a sock. You know, so my two favorite ventriloquists, one used a $4,000 multi-action hard figure, and the other one used a sock. So there you go. That's the range of money you need to spend on a puppet, anywhere between nothing and thousands and thousands of pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I love puppets. My introduction to puppets was Jim Henson. I grew up in the 70s and the Muppets were on TV before the Muppets, Sesame Street, and just fell in love with the idea of puppets. Even my younger brother, when we were in middle school, decided we wanted to do puppets like Jim Henson. My parents didn't have money. I didn't have money. We came up with this brilliant idea. We were going to do an egg sale. So we went to the first house and said, we're trying to raise money for some puppets. Would you donate an egg? We go to the next store and say, we're trying to raise money. Would you buy an egg? So we had no inventory. And we raised enough money to buy the Sesame Street puppets. And then we started doing them in our garage and charging kids a nickel to come in and watch the puppet show. And then it just grew. I mean, our love for puppets. We went from that in middle school to all the way through high school. We were doing puppets all over the state of Texas and just love puppets, but never thought of I could do this and make money, you know, as a job. It is incredible. Now I use puppets in my show, and the kids love them more than me. I have this one Axtell alligator. His name is Snapper.
Yep.
And I'll walk in, kids that have seen me before, and they're going, is Snapper here? Where's Snapper? Can we talk to Snapper? I'm like, dude, I haven't even started yet, and I'm glad you're looking for Snapper.
Yeah, I get. Are you the guy with the purple dragon? Yes. Yeah, okay. All right, we got the right person. Okay. Yeah, my daughter wants the purple dragon at her birthday party. You do bring the purple dragon, don't you? Yeah. Well, the odd thing, though, is so just before the first lockdown, I've been talking to the guy who built my purple dragon. He's a very professional builder, built all sorts of things for TV and movies and crazy stuff. And I wanted a second version of my dragon. And he'd had him for ages, and we'd been going on about this for ages, and it was just dragging on, and he was moving house. And I'd taken it to his house, which was like 2.5 hour drive away. And I'd called him up and said, can I come and collect it? And he went, I could still do with it for a couple of weeks. And it's like, I know exactly what's going to happen. You're going to end up with it, and we're going to go into lockdown, which is exactly what happened.
Oh.
So he's got my big dragon, my first character. And one of the things I decided to do over the first lockdown we had here was I was doing a show from the shed. So I was doing a daily show. Yeah, worked out about 15 minutes long. I thought about doing a daily joke with my dragon. That's where this idea started from. Before lockdown, before we even thought about knew what coronavirus was, I just thought that would be a good social media thing to do. So then what started happening was it's like, okay, lockdown happens, we're all shut down, can't do anything. I thought, well, I'll do show from the shed. But I haven't got my dragon. I haven't got my big dragon. But the other thing I've got is I've got a dog puppet. I used to have one of the floppy dogs from Folk Madness that's on my Practical Magic DVD that I had. And because I had that one, and everyone had that one, which is tend to be how I end up with custom puppets, going on a bit of a tangent. I had an Axtell dragon that I did lots of things with. I had lots of stories based around it. And then I went, oh, I want a custom puppet. I want something that's just mine. And I looked at all sorts of ideas, and then I went, why don't I get a custom dragon? I've got all the stories for the dragon. I've got tricks that work with it. So I'll just retire the Axtell dragon and bring in a completely new dragon that will be purple because that's kind of my color, and have that. Same with my dog. So I had this dog, and everyone's got that dog, so you bring it out, and they go, oh, that's Jack. No, that's what Dave calls his. Oh, is it Brian? No, that's what Sam calls it. It's like, I want to bring out a dog that people will go, oh, that's fantastic. So bizarrely, there was, when I was looking for the dragon builder, I found this guy in London. But in the meantime, someone come back to building puppets who built all the puppets for Keith Harris. So he built Orville and Cuddles and loads of things for loads of people. And he lives like 10 minutes away. So I commissioned him to build my dog. So suddenly I've got this idea of a show and no main character. So my dog before literally just did what my old dog did. And then suddenly my dog is now my new main character because he's the star of a show from the shed. And over, I think we did about 70 episodes.
Wow.
His character really, really developed. So people often ask me, it's like, well, how do I get good, or how do I develop a character? I said, well, do something every day. You know, just do a little social media thing every day or every week. So that one came in. And then to replace my dragon, I've got a little dragon in an egg made by a company called Living Puppets in Germany. Well, my dragon is, you know, it's thousands of pounds because it's a custom design just from me. And again, going back to the Sherry Lewis thing, this little dragon in an egg is £30 or like $50 or something like that. I love it. It's like, it's got such a life. It's got such a character to it. It's like, well, why do I need to spend all this money on puppets when this thing is amazing and it's like $30, £30? What I will do, what I keep saying I'll do, is I will remake the egg for it. Because the egg that it's in is just like a cloth egg, and that kind of falls to pieces and things. Doesn't hold its shape. So I do want to make a new egg for it to sit in. So then that will make it a little bit nicer. But yeah, that's kind of me and puppets.
Hey, well, your show From the Shed, is that something people can find, can watch still, or?
Yeah, so it's all up on Facebook on my Colin Diamond Magic and Ventriloquism site. And it's also on YouTube. It should have its own channel on YouTube. So if you put in Colin Diamond and Show From the Shed. Yeah, there's 70 episodes. There was a thing here back in the 80s, maybe, that was called The Broom Cupboard. And basically, it was the announcer who did the continuity between shows on children's TV. And it became then they were doing birthdays. And that had a little puppet called Gordon the Gopher in it. So it was that kind of idea. So what happened was, in the Show From the Shed, is I would do a little bit of magic or do a little demonstration of something. Me and Elvis, my dog, we would tell each other a joke. Elvis doesn't really get jokes. He doesn't really know how to tell them. He doesn't understand them when they happen. And then there was a link to a cartoon. So I couldn't incorporate a cartoon. So I just put up a link for someone to watch. And we did birthday shout-outs. So people could write in and say, oh, you know, could you say hello to little Johnny? It's his fifth birthday. Or little Johnny's doing really well with his homeschooling. Can you say hello to him? So, yeah, and it was kind of fun. One of the reasons I stopped, I think, was I was kind of running out of material and needed to earn some money as well. That was one of the other things. But trying to find... So if we did 70 episodes, we're doing a joke each between me and Elvis. So that's 140 clean jokes you needed to find that would clean and funny. Yeah. So that was quite hard work. And finding cartoons I could put a link to was getting difficult as well. So I stopped. It went weekly for like only for a couple of weeks, and then I just stopped doing it and did other things with my time.
Well, I think that was a great way to spend the lockdown time, and I will definitely have to check out the YouTube page and take a look at some of those. I'm excited to do that.
I love the bits with Elvis. The bits with Elvis were just fun. It's funny how us ventriloquists, we just talk about our puppets as if they're nothing to do with us. yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Check it out.
That's great. Now, think about, you talked about moving into magic and then into puppets and this becoming full-time for you. If somebody were considering becoming a full-time entertainer, what kind of advice would you give them?
Don't do it. Don't do it. you know, it's... But no, seriously, I would say... Consider all the things. I mean, it's great. When it's working well, it's amazing. We get paid really well for making kids laugh. If you're doing family shows, and if you're doing wedding magic, you're being paid really well for, you know, doing card tricks. And I've done a few weddings. I'm quite jealous of these guys who do turn up with, like, you know, it's just, where are all your props? In my pocket. It's like... Is that it? You just walk in and start work? Yeah. Oh, okay. I've got an estate car full of, well, like a station wagon full of a PA system and box of puppets and a box of this. And it's like, oh, it takes me an hour to set up. Well, again, one of the reasons why I say don't is a lot of what we do is weekends. And depending where your family life is, you have to take that into consideration. Because if you're not careful, you end up working every weekend. And if your partner's got a job and they work Monday to Friday, you've got to be careful on your family time. Mm. Yeah, it's great if you can make it work. But make sure you enjoy it. I've seen children's entertainers especially, and you look at them and go, you're not enjoying this. It's time for you to get out. Because if you don't enjoy it, as I said, you know, the rates of pay when you're doing it can be really good and you can be really handsomely rewarded it. But if you're not enjoying it, it's not the job for you. You've got to get into it but start slow. Just go in. It is one of those things that you can definitely do when you've got a normal job as well. I know lots of children's entertainers who work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and then do a couple of shows at the weekend to top up their income. Mm. And that's great because you don't actually have to do it. If you go, we need a weekend free because we need to go somewhere, then you can just block that weekend out in your diary. The trouble is when you're trying to, make it, when it's your job, you kind of have to take, or there's a mentality that says you have to take everything that comes in, because if you don't, if I don't take that job, then I might not have a job at all that weekend. And then you look through a diary and you go, let's go away sometime for a weekend. You go, well, I've got one job that weekend and one job that weekend. And it's like, no, that's not the way to do it. I think you need to think of it as a real job. And from a real job, you also need vacation. So you need some downtime. You need to book that in and go, you know what? We're going away then. Doesn't matter what it is that comes in the diary. Unless it's absolutely super life-changing job, you know. If they want you to work, I don't know, if they want you to do Radio City or the Palladium here, it's like, you know what? Yeah, they want me to open for... The Rolling Stones want a ventriloquist to do two gags, and they're going to pay me £500,000. It's like, you know what? Let's cancel the holiday. We'll do that. But yeah, I think COVID has changed some performers' minds. You know, we've got a lot of people right now. Some are doing just proper menial jobs. They're just out stacking shelves and hankering for when they can get back to performing. But I know some who've now sort of moved into a career and they're going, you know what? This is easier. I know what I'm being paid every month. I get holiday pay. I get sick pay. So I would, other advice for people entering it as a profession. Yeah. Just go into it with your eyes open. Make sure you thoroughly enjoy it. Join some clubs, talk to some people. You know, most people are fairly open if you ask them a straightforward, honest question. The one that always gets me, I always find it really funny, is how close to the chest performers want to keep how much they charge. You go to a magic club and you go, how much do you charge for your 45-minute magic show? Well, you know. Okay, you don't want to tell me. So you get home and you phone them up, or you get your wife to phone them up and go, we're thinking of having a birthday for little Johnny. How much is your 45-minute show? And he says, it's £30 or £750 or 3,000, whatever their figure might be, they tell you straight away. And it's like, well, why won't you tell me? That's the first thing I did when I moved from London down to the west of England where I live now, to figure out what the going rate was for magicians in my area. I just phoned them up as if I was booking a show and asked them what their price was. Because if I phoned them up and said, hi, it's Colin Diamond here. I'm just moving down from London. I'm trying to gather what people charge for their shows. They wouldn't tell me.
Yeah.
But if I phone them up and go, I want to book a party for my son, how much you charge? They tell you immediately. So it's not a great secret. It's like, just share it. And if people don't like, I don't know, what do people say?
I don't get it either. I mean, on our website, it's posted. You just didn't even have to call us.
Yeah.
You just look on the website, the number's there. And if you have a problem with it, don't call. If it fits your budget, we're the person for you.
Yeah, I always say it's, you know, I always say that Aston Martin don't care that Skoda make cheaper cars.
That's right.
You know, it's a car. Well, yeah, if you just want a car, buy one of those. Depends what you want it for. Depends what your budget is. Depends what your thought process are. I mean, there's loads of people who could afford amazing cars who drive around in 20-year-old beaten up cars. And it's just a car. I'll spend money on something else.
So, yeah. Now, that's a perfect transition as we talk about that. Branding. That's a buzzword in our industry. Branding. How do you feel about that? How do you use it? How would you describe your brand?
I'm just the guy with the purple dragon. I think that's pretty much it. I'm probably not the best person to ask because I've changed things a few times. Every time I think something should be different. I think you've got the same. I think your logo made by Scott over in England.
Yes. Scott, I love Scott's designs. Work. Yes.
Yeah. See, now I've got a problem here. So Scott did this thing several years ago. You know, I don't know, 15 years ago it might be. It was a long time ago. And he put out this thing saying, he must have put it on like an entertainer's website. People are looking for a new logo. Contact me, blah, 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 blah. And I contact him. So I've had my Scott's logo for about 15 years. We've tweaked it a little bit. Oh, obviously, the great thing, moving on a little bit, the great thing with caricatures is they don't age as fast as a photograph, you know. Apart from I've now got hair down past my shoulder and a beard, which isn't on my logo at all. It's not what I look like on any of my publicity. I had publicity shots taken last, like, 18 months ago. And I think I've been growing my hair ever since. So it just looks, they can just go in the bin. So that's one thing with branding is make it look like you. It's no point having business cards. I had business cards when I was doing wedding fairs and people would pick them up and go, is that you? It's like, yeah. Oh, you look much better with the beard. It's like, yeah, I know. I need to redo all of that. Anyway, so going back to Scott, right? People say, oh, who does those great logos for children's entertainers? People go, oh, it's Scott. And it's like, if someone asked me, where would you get a logo? I would say, go somewhere other than Scott. not because I don't like Scott, but Scott's got a... I mean... I know Scott's got a look because as soon as I saw your logo, I knew it was one of Scott's. Whereas, you know, there's a million graphic designers in the world and you could go to someone that doesn't look like that. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a good thing. Maybe you're going to say, oh, well, he belongs to this tribe. he's one of those people. And yeah. And because he's still incredibly cheap. He could put a zero on the end of his figures pretty much, really, and people would probably still buy them because that's what children's entertainers use. We do get a lot of that as well. There's a couple of entertainers in this country, and their setup has now pretty much been copied. It's like, well, if these guys are now changed their sound system to this. Well, that's the sound system we need. It's like, what's wrong with the sound system you got? Oh, but it's not the one they're using now. And it's like, I didn't answer the question. It's like most, you know, so a lot of entertainers are using the Bose systems, the L1 and whatever. And I use H&K Audio, or I was using an H&K Audio, the Lucas Nano system. And it's like, oh, why are you using that? Well, it does true stereo for a start. There's definitely some other plus points, you know. H&K make PA systems. That's what they're known for. Bose are known for making little radios and stuff. And that's not really their thing. It's one of the things they do. You know, we now have Bose stores and you go in, they do, you know, the amazing noise cancelling headphones and all that. So they're more known for their smaller stuff. And now they've done this range of PAs, and they sound fine. But so, you know, there's other companies out there. And again, one of the reasons why I got the HK stuff was I worked in a music store and I could get HK at trade. So it's like, it's just like, that worked and I can get it for a darn good price. So I'm having that one. Thank you very much. But yeah, I think sometimes we need to look around and go, right, why are we doing this? And if you're only doing it because that's what, you know, your favorite magician uses or whatever. I think if you want to be different, going back to that branding thing, if you want to be different, if you want to stand out, get something that is definitely your own, which is why I went for, you know, I love Steve Axtell. He's a great guy. I've met him a few times. I love his product. He makes amazing puppets. That said, is one of the things I bought his orangutan puppet. And it was called Oscar, and I moved areas, and I moved to this area, and my nearest competition had an Axtell orangutan called Oscar.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, oh. And the trouble with puppets is, I think anything, if you bring out a, I think sometimes I overthink things. I think sometimes you think, well, these kids aren't seeing entertainers all the time. So they're not seeing your stuff all the time. So if you pull out, there's a Axtell green machine up there. Well, and that's not quite the same because you can produce anything from that. Mm-hmm. But if you bring out a Run Rabbit Run and it's a standard Run Rabbit Run, if kids have seen a Run Rabbit Run, they know what's going to happen. They might still be excited. But if you bring out a puppet's got its own personality. And if you bring out a puppet that children have seen before with somebody else, it's confusing. So imagine, I don't know, if you watched a Laurel and Hardy movie and suddenly Stan Laurel's talking in a completely different voice with a completely different personality. It's just weird. It's like, that's not meant to happen. So going back to branding, I like being a bit different. So if everyone else is doing something, I kind of go, you know what, I'm gonna have something else. But you know, I think as I said, sometimes I think I overthink it. I think, you know, going back to Scott's work's great. But yeah, find someone local you can work with. I'd definitely do that as well.
Good advice. I mean, I do have Scott's logo. We've had it for several years and changed it a couple of times. But, you know, my kids, my libraries, the people I am trying to attract, they don't know that Scott's logo is everywhere.
No, unless they see, unless you've got sort of local competition and some of them, depending on what your look is. And so if it's, you know, if you're a guy with less hair than me, glasses and an Axtell parrot, and that's what you want on your logo. And there's someone else who they might be, I don't know, 20 pounds heavier than you. And their glasses might be different, but they've got the same hairstyle and the same parrot, is your logos are going to end up looking similar.
Yeah.
Because that's how he does his logos. And that's probably why they can be so cheap.
Yeah, there was and I wish I could think of the performer's name. I think he's in the UK. I know he's in Europe, but there's a guy that could be my twin. And He contacted me because I had run some promotion. He saw the picture and he went, "When did I do that show?" And then he realized it wasn't him.
Yeah.
It was so funny when he said, I don't remember being in that show. And then I realized it wasn't me.
It's the other side of the world.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned YouTube and Facebook. So obviously you're engaged with social media. How involved in that are you normally? I know with COVID and all that, we've all done different things, but normal promotional material in social media, do you use that? How do you use it?
Honestly, I don't use it well enough. And I was talking the other day to someone and it's like, remember when Yellow Pages was dying? And Yellow Pages were shrinking every time you got it. And it went to something that was like 5 inches thick and took two people to lift. It got smaller and smaller, and then it changed its whole dimension and became half complete. And it was like, Yellow Pages is going. And I think I got my first website again. It was in the 90s. And it was like, this is the way to go. But now it's like, do you remember those days of Yellow Pages? When if you wanted a magician, you open up Yellow Pages and you look for children's entertainer or magician. There was like a dozen people to choose from. You know they were all in your area, or you know, they might be the next Yellow Pages over, but they were going to travel, because sometimes you might decide to advertise in two Yellow Pages if you're really feeling flush. And all you had to decide, you did your promotion once a year when the person with Yellow Pages called or came round, and you decided how big you wanted your advert and whether it was going to be a picture, they had Scott's logo in it or whatever it was. And that was it. Now it's like, I did some training with a lady on social media, and she was saying, on Instagram, you want to be posting like 5 times a day. It's like, And then it was, you want IGTV, Instagram television. That's the new big thing. And then it's like, now it's Instagram Reels. You need to be doing Instagram Reels. Oh, and then TikTok. People are doing quite a lot on TikTok. And it's like, and I go, well, I'm on Facebook. And they go, you don't do anything on Facebook. Facebook's just for old people. Like, okay, well, what do you call old? Well, anybody over 40 kind of thing. And it's like,
You got to explain what Yellow Pages are to everybody under 40. You know, is a Yellow Pages?
But it's like, if you talk to the younger people who, if you're doing children's shows, your kind of target market is people from, say, about 25 to 45.
Mm-hmm.
That's your main demographic. They're not on Facebook. You know, and some of the ones in their 40s, but half of those, the younger mums, like the 25 to 35 year old mums, that's Instagram. They're on Instagram. And then coming up behind this lot will be somebody on something new. And it's to figure out how that works. And I was talking to some people more my age. So I'm fast approaching 60. So I was 58 at the end of last year, and the guy I was speaking to he's in his 50s, but only like in his 50s. And he was saying, well, up until COVID hit, we were getting a lot of our work was all word of mouth. It's all repeat bookings. Mm. It's all that sort of stuff. And then people see you at shows. Going back to branding, everyone who comes to see my show, all the children, they all get a Snot the Dragon poster, which is an A4 size, which is like US letter size poster. And everyone got one of those. And I considered those free. When I'm handing them out, there was no charge. So if I did, I don't know, if I was at an event somewhere and I might do 4 shows at the event, if the same child came up after every show and wanted a poster for himself, a poster for his sister, and a poster for his brother, they could have three posters. They could have 9 posters by the end of the day, 12 posters, whatever they wanted by the end of the day, because I considered they were free. Because if I got one booking from that ream of 500 posters, it paid for the posters. So there was no value to the actual poster. So I would just fire them out. But we haven't done that now for 12 months, and it's going to be longer than that before we actually get round to doing it. So the mums haven't seen me at a party last year. The bookers for fairs and festivals didn't see me last year. Those people change quite quickly. And if they haven't seen you, they'll Google it. They'll find somebody else who will do the job. And it's like, well, so now we need to be on social media. And this guy was going, because I don't know if I want to do it. I don't know if I want to put the effort in to get the amount of work that you'd get. When you go, there's new younger performers who are already all over social media anyway. That's what they're doing. They're all over it. And you kind of go, they understand how this works. we've got to like completely retrain to do it. And it's like, yep, I understand that. So I'm not sure. And again, we've got like local Facebook groups here, and someone will post up, oh, I'm looking for something to do for a 6-year-old's birthday party. Any recommendations? And suddenly there was a list. We counted them up one time, and there was about 50 things for children to do for their birthday. You know, that included, you know, crafts, sliding down hills in Zorbs or whatever. And then there's reptile parties and princess parties and all the rest of it. And magician was only one of those 50 things. So if they decide to have a magician, then there's, you know, you Google magicians for your area and you know what it's like. It's not magicians in your area. It's magicians who pay to be on the front page of Google, and they're all over it. So suddenly it's like having a magician for your birthday party is quite a small thing. And in the UK, magicians for birthday parties is our main work. Mm. I know in America you have your library programs. We just don't have that here. And we don't do school assemblies. We do, you know, you do a few. You'll do a show at Christmas for a school. But we don't have that history of school assembly shows or library programs. So we make most of our money at birthdays. Which is again, like I was saying about working weekends. So yeah, right, tough. Right. I'm not quite sure what to do on social media. And I don't know what the next thing will be. At the end of the day, and again, at the end of the day, it's have a good show. So when people do see it, somebody else wants to book it.
Right, right. Well, what about the idea of other performers? If you're a performer and you want to be better at what you do, who are some people you should be aware of?
For teaching you, or just people to look at who are going to be good?
Both or either.
So if I could buy shares in a performer, I would buy shares in Max Fulham.
Oh, I keep hearing that name.
Yeah.
I've not seen him, but I keep hearing his name.
Oh, he's a genius. He's a comedy genius. He started coming through the ranks, I don't know, but when he was 15 or something was when we were first kind of made aware of him. And he did as a 15-year-old, one of the main things we saw of him, first of all, the first kind of puppet he bought this big blue octopus with a completely downturned mouth. It was like this really depressed looking octopus. And it's like, okay, that's going to be your character. And he does things with just like pedal bins and just all sorts of weird bits and pieces. And again, see, he's all over YouTube. He's all over social media. He puts things up all the time. But he might be 20 now. He might be 20. Only just, maybe. And he's done the big pantomimes here. There's a company called Kudos who do the big panto productions. And he's already been in one of those. He was lined up to do one last year, but that didn't happen because of COVID. He's stormed it at the Vent Convention in Kentucky. He's doing a thing for CAX this year, but that's online. He did a show. He did like 6 YouTube episodes in lockdown. So yeah, check those out. Check out Max Fulham. He's totally bonkers. He's totally bonkers. But in a good way. He's like a Spike Milligan type madness, and it's just that you just goes off on a tangent, and it's now I can see him. Yeah, you know, so he's sort of known as a ventriloquist. But I can see him doing any form of comedy. So it'd be interesting to know where he's going to end up. But looking at things, you know, where you can learn, I would definitely try and find a local club. Because if you're lucky, you can find some good people there. Although I was a member of the Magic Circle when I was living in London, the best magic club that I've ever been a member of, I think, apart from the Cotswolds Magic Society, which is the one I'm in now, which is great. But there was one, this guy called George, who was an old boy. I think he must have been about 80 when he was running it. And he had it in his house because the club that he belonged to moved. And to a different place in London. It was like, and some people didn't want to go. And it's like, well, I'll just start having this, having meetings in my house. And you all turned up and you'd bring biscuits or cake. But I had lots of professional performers. It was a ventriloquist called Len Belmont. And Len Belmont was amazing as well. He had the best distant voice I've ever heard. And he's like, you know, use the showbiz term, he was always on, you know. You'd just be sat around and he'd be having imaginary phone calls with people and stuff. But he was brilliant. And we had great close-up workers. And we'd have lecturers. We'd have lecturers turn up and they go, this is just your house, isn't it? It's like, yeah. We got quite a big front room. It's like, okay. And you'd sit around in the front room because you really got to know people. So that's quite good because you get to know people. And then you know about the industry and you know what's going on and hear people's gripes and their big wins and stuff like that, which is good.
That's good. Well, hey, as we come up to about time we have to wrap up, I want you to think about the idea of the top three things to becoming a successful entertainer. If you were communicating that to someone, whether they were new to the business or been in it for years, what would you say are the top three things that lead to success?
Ooh, have a great show. Have a unique show, or at least unique points to it, and enjoy what you do. Mm. So for me, what got me there was finding that puppet, not wanting a real job. So deciding this is what I want to do, with all the pitfalls, with everything that goes along with it. The more time now I have to spend in my shed doing social media and emails and all that you didn't have to do before. It's still better than a real job. And enjoying children and the sounds of laughter. I mean, one of the best things I had it recently on a Zoom show, you know, because of lockdown and all the rest of it. It was a Zoom show for a friend's daughter. And he messaged me at the end of it and goes, that's amazing. I've not heard her laugh like that in months. Mm. And it's like, you know, children are missing it. And I love working in hospitals. Again, you get that same thing. You come out, you do a little job in a little side room for one child and you make a balloon and you're being silly and you're just doing the nonsense that you do. And the child's laughing and having fun and you're just interacting with that child as a child, just doing what you do. And you come out of that room and the dad goes, that's the first time we've heard her laugh in 3 months. Mm-hmm. And you kind of go, oh, didn't realize that. You know, it's a great job. I mean, I've done birthday parties for children where they know and everyone else knows this will be the last birthday party that they'll have. Mm. You know, and to go in there and bring laughter to those people and make a memory for those people, that's, you don't get that in everyday jobs. You don't get to make those changes, those lifetime changing memories. So yeah, it's great. As one of the things I've said, one of my posts for social media I did over this was a picture of a granddad. And the child saying, granddad, what did you do for your birthday in the great lockdown of 2020? And you can imagine that, you know, if we were a little bit older or whatever, or, you know, the distance wasn't so great from the Spanish flu, you know, when you go, what did you do in the Spanish flu? What did you do in the war? What did you do in the great lockdown of 2020? And if you've had a birthday party over Zoom in 2020, you'll probably remember it because that will be the only year you'll ever have a birthday party over Zoom. Hopefully. Hopefully. Please. Let's get back to normality as soon as we possibly can.
Oh, yes. I mean, the Zoom shows are great, but that's one thing about what we do, live entertainment. There's nothing like being at a good show, live entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing that you can't replace it with something on the screen.
No, I mean, I make my Zoom shows are as interactive as possible. One of the problems with the Zoom shows is as soon as you're looking around the squares, you're not looking at anybody. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a live show, when you're looking around the audience, they know you're looking at somebody. But in a Zoom show, as soon as you try and find somebody to help you, you're no longer looking at anybody, which is just a little bit weird. But yeah, you just do the best you can.
Oh, good, good. All right, last thing, resources. I know you have some things available, Colin. Where can people find stuff? I know you've got DVDs. I still use DVDs on one of my computers that can take one. But but what about online resources or things you have available for our listeners?
Yeah, so if you've not heard of the Kids Entertainer Academy, you need to go and check that out. The Kids Entertainer Academy is an amazing resource for children's entertainers. There are lots and lots, certainly maybe 30 or whatever, actual full courses. One of mine that's on there at the moment is the Add a Puppet course. So that was just about getting a puppet into your act, which was kind of a continuation of my DVD, which is available from Practical Magic in the UK still. So that was just, if you've got a puppet lying around and people buy puppets because they think they're cute and then they kind of go, oh, I don't really know what to do with it. So that whole course gets you into doing that. And I've just completed another course, which is one of the things I did in lockdown, which is a 70-day ventriloquism course. So that's if you've got a puppet and you want to do ventriloquism in your act, it's a 70-day, like I said, like a 70-step program. It's got rehearsal tips in it. It's got all sorts of great things in it. And that will take you right the way through. It teaches you how to write a script. It teaches you how to develop characters. And that will take you right the way through until you've got a show ready to go. Now, that course isn't available just yet. What anyone can do, if they're interested in knowing when that course is available, if they contact me, if they go to colindiamond.com, and Diamond is DYMOND, just to make it confusing. I blame the French. But if you go to colindiamond.com, they can find a way of contacting me. And if they just say, oh, I'm interested, can you put me on a waiting list? Can you let me know when it's done? And then as soon as it's ready to go, I'll send them out the link that they can just click onto. And there'll be a special deal for joining the Kids Entertainer Academy if you join because you want my course. So there'll be a good time to do it.
Very good. Very good. Well, I have Colin's DVDs, and they are great. And I encourage you to follow up on either the DVD from Practical Magic or Kids Entertainers Hub. There's, like you said, tons of stuff there. Julian and Ken were heroes that helped me get started when they started that. And so both of those great resources, encourage you to check it out. Well, Colin, I have truly enjoyed our time today, getting to know you a little bit, getting to hear about your history and where you're going. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
If this is your first time tuning in, I encourage you to subscribe to the show so that you can hear all the great episodes that we have coming up in the next few weeks.